Food is fuel for your body, your mind, and definitely your sport. But let's face it, nutrition is confusing, and the expectations on girls and women to be thin and have a six-pack are exhausting. If you've ever been frustrated with your body, confused about nutrition, obsessed with eating healthy, or guilty when you don't, underate, overate, or overtrained, and overwhelmed with all the pressure, then this podcast is for you. Nutrition can be easy. You can take control of it, but it might start with letting go of control by asking for help and making a change. I'm Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition, where I empower female athletes to overcome nutrition concerns and perform at their highest level, to stop being confused by all the mixed or harmful messages, and finally have confidence in your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. Today's episode is thanks to our Patreon members and our affiliates and partners. Head to patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition to join our membership or donate to the podcast, and stay tuned to hear about some amazing deals and discounts from our partners, including Prevenix, Inside Tracker, Orgain, Practice Better, and Jen and Carrie. But for now, we're getting right to the show. Enjoy. Hello, fans and listeners. This is Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, your host of the podcast and owner of Rise Up Nutrition. Super excited for our guest today, Allie Ostrander. She is an elite runner, a mental health advocate, and we have so much to talk about with her journey with running and food and nutrition and just what's going on in her life these days. She's super active on her YouTube channel and Instagram as well. I feel like she really doesn't need an introduction as she's so well known, especially in this space. But for those of you who may not be familiar with her, she is a three-time NCAA champion in the steeplechase 3 years in a row when she was running at Boise State from 2017, 18, and 19. She ran with Brooks Beese for a while. She's from Alaska, and right now she's been very vocal and authentic over the past 2 years in her journey with nutrition as well, and she has so much insight to share about that, so we'll get into that today. Allie, thank you so much for being willing to come on our podcast today.
Thank you. I am excited.
Yeah, for sure. So I always like to start with just kind of asking our guests, you know, their journey with athletics and when you found your passion for running.
Yeah. So when I was growing up, both my parents like would go on runs. They were in like a local running club. So I kind of grew up around it.
Yeah.
But I didn't really start getting into it until probably like initially, like third grade, when my sister started running in middle school. I would like go to her it was just kind of something I did, you know. It was another sport, just like basketball or soccer or skiing or whatever. And then when I was halfway through high school, I really started to take it seriously and like train on my own outside of practice in the off season, and started to see it more as something that like I could do in college and maybe beyond, and not just like another sport during the school year.
Yeah, it's amazing. I have siblings too, and I think in a similar way, it was when my sister started running track in high school is when I kind of picked up on it as well. So I love that it just kind of was in the family and just something you did. And you did a bunch of other sports too, you said.
Yeah.
So sometime midway through high school, you were like, hey, I'm actually really, really good at this and looking not just a passion, but looking to do it in college as well. This is like a weird question, but when growing up in Alaska, I would imagine looking at colleges is, I don't know, it's like anytime you look at colleges, there might be a move involved, but that just seems like such a bigger move if you're going to come to more like the continental, you know, US, right?
Yeah.
That's a big move.
Yeah. I think that if you grew up in Alaska, though, at least me personally, you really want that move because you've been kind of like isolated from the rest of the US for your whole life. And I'm super excited to live somewhere else and see what that was like. Just that I'd have like more experience, get a feel for something different. So even though college was going to be a big move, I was like very stoked on it. That was not holding me back whatsoever. I looked at schools in the Northeast. I looked at schools in the Southeast. Like I was keen to go anywhere, regardless
anywhere
of where I was.
So you were super excited for it. And that's mm-hmm. awesome. Yeah. I can't imagine that feeling of, I know Alaska is, it's part of the US, but it's so far away and so different, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And now, culture and everything. Older, I'm like really happy I'm in Seattle because I get to be like connected to the US, but I'm also one flight away from my family. So kind of have both worlds there.
Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure. Yeah. So, and steeplechase where you really excel at, and excel that in college. You don't have that in high school. So did you go into college knowing you wanted to try steeple, or was that something that your coaches were like, you know, saw that potential in you?
Well, so in high school, in middle school, I actually did hurdles some.
Okay.
I did the 100 hurdles. In high school, I did the 300 hurdles. So I kind of hurdling technique. I had a really good hurdle coach, even though I was not very good at it. Like they were sprints. That's not my forte, but I just had fun.
Yeah.
The hurdle coach was great. So I had like decent coaching on technique. And so in college, I wasn't necessarily thinking I was going to do the steeplechase, but I was in the middle of my redshirt freshman year. I had had like a whole year of missing seasons due to injury and stuff. And I was just like really, really nervous to get back into racing. And so my coach and I decided it might help take some of the pressure off if I did like a new event I had never done before.
Oh, interesting.
Tested steeplechase, I was like, oh yeah, for sure, like I would try it. And they had me jump over some hurdles in practice, and they were like, yeah, like she actually knows how to hurdle, so this could go well.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like how we landed on that.
Yeah, I love that. I know hurdling is, it is such a technique, and even though the steeple is, it's a different type of hurdle, you still, that technique makes the difference in the race. So
yeah, it's like a higher stakes hurdle as well, because it doesn't move.
No kidding. So about, gosh, I don't know the exact dates, but around 2 years ago or so, you decided to share on your YouTube channel with authenticity, really what you were going through and some struggles that you were going through with nutrition. And I'd love, obviously, with this being a nutrition podcast, if we can, you know, dive into that and your journey. And of course, if any listeners, you know, aren't familiar, you know, there's so many good videos on your YouTube channel throughout this process that I would direct people to, and we'll include like in the show notes and things like that. But I think just, you know, your journey as a woman, as an athlete, you know, when would you say that nutrition like first came on your radar or crossed your brain as something that was, whether it was important in life or a problem in life, like, you know, when we're kids, we just eat,
mm-hmm.
you know, and don't really, we eat what's put in front of us, you know? So at what point did food or nutrition become something that you thought about?
Yeah. So kind of the earliest I remember this happening was like sixth grade, right in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just because like I was the younger sibling. I had kind of seen my sister starting to go through puberty, and I saw how that affected her running. And it wasn't necessarily negative either at the time. Like I think she just kind of plateaued for a year, but I saw that as like, oh, I don't want that to happen to me. Like I always want to be improving in my running. So I just needed to like control that. So to me, I was like, well, I'll just control what I'm eating all the time. I'll make sure that I don't eat enough to have that happen to me. And so like that was kind of the first time that I started paying attention to that. And I mean, also looking back, it's like that is a huge source. It's like for me, I always want to be in control. Like I really, really enjoy the feeling of control and all of that in all aspects of my life. But now like the more that I've learned, it's like it's not you are not necessarily like in control of your nutrition. Like it's more of a collaboration between like your mind and your body. Like they obviously, you know, you listen to your cravings and what you want and what your body is asking for. But like at the end of the day, your body's asking for it. And like that needs to be more of what guides those decisions. Whereas me, it was like fully just my mind being like, nope, this is what we eat. This is when we will eat it. And like it was very systematic.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was kind of like my initial start into paying attention to nutrition. But I would say like that it wasn't it wasn't a productive start, you know, it maybe shouldn't have been the start.
Right, right. But I think so many people can relate to that. I mean, just that time period of puberty change, wanting to have a sense of autonomy and control in your life, right? That starts around that age, like preteen, early teenage years, where we want to control things and do things our way to get an outcome that we want or think we want. And so it's really like, it's honestly like a perfect storm kind of all coming together at that age. And it's something that I think a lot of people experience, and you did as well. And so at what, like, so that started happening, but so often as the story goes, and it's something I resonate with too, is like, but we didn't know it was a bad thing. You know, we thought that, control was a good thing. What were some signs in whether it be your physical or your mental health that maybe what was going on with your relationship with food wasn't ideal, wasn't optimal?
Yeah, I think it took me like a long time to kind of realize that anything about that might not be good, because
yeah,
I was just like, I mean, this isn't impacting my life. Like, I eat differently, but that's like the only thing that's different, you know? And I definitely, like, looking back, know that there were signs that it wasn't good, you know? But like, as a, you know, 12-year-old, that wasn't something that I realized at the time.
Yeah.
You know, like, I wasn't growing as fast as I had been, stuff like that. But I think I had such, at the time that I kind of started participating in these like disordered behaviors, I had such a small understanding of like the impact that that could have on my overall health, or like the repercussions that could occur far down the line. And I honestly didn't really learn about some of those repercussions until college, like when I was 20 years old.
Years later.
Starting at 12. So that's 8 years later that I kind of became aware of that. And as far as like actual impact on my day-to-day life, I think that unfortunately, like, it had very little, just because when you're in high school and you're doing school sports, like, your life is very, very structured. And so I think it was easy for me to like fit this into that structure exactly. Mm. You know, you go to school and then you go to practice and you go home, you do your homework, and like, it's pretty straightforward. And like, it just, to me at the time, it wasn't really holding me back from anything I would have wanted to do. I mean, so looking back, some of the bad signs were that like I was growing slower. I didn't hit puberty really. I didn't get my period, and I was cold all the time. I was always wearing a winter jacket inside.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there were other like signs, you know, like I was inflexible with food, and I was like, you know, always very particular with what I was eating. And I also, so my freshman year of high school, in one race at the end of the year in cross country, I actually collapsed during the race. And then So we went to a children's hospital in Seattle to kind of try to figure out like what was going on. And so there were some other signs there, like my thyroid was underactive, I had anemia, some stuff like that. And so, you know, they just had me take an iron supplement and had me take a medication. And like, those doctors like just didn't really think about like what the underlying cause there might have been.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was never lying to anyone, and no doctors, no one ever told me anything was wrong. And so I kind of was just like, well, yeah, it is. It's not fine. All of this is just, it's fine. So that's like disappointing, but I think that healthcare has improved, and there's more knowledge of that now. But yeah, then when I was in college, I learned that the last 8 years I've been like severely damaging my bone density. And so that was like kind of the biggest wake up call, was then like, oh my gosh. I mean, of course it's like, it's dumb that that's the biggest wake up call for me. But to me, I was like, oh, well, I need strong bones to run. So like, this isn't good anymore. Like, that's bad then. But at that point, it was like, those behaviors and thoughts were so deep rooted that it was like very, very hard to escape from them. And I didn't end up like seriously pursuing recovery until I basically absolutely had to. And that was 2 years ago, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey fans, I hope you are enjoying this conversation so far, and we'll be back to it in just a moment. But first, I want to pause and let you know that this episode is brought to you by the Female Athlete System of Transformation, aka the Fast Track to overcome disordered eating and use food as fuel to perform at your highest level. The Female Athlete System of Transformation is my unique program and proven systems to guide female athletes to understanding and implementing the proper nutrition for their sport, life, and health. Myself and my team of registered sports dietitians work one-on-one with clients to address their unique needs and counsel them through the nutritional and behavioral changes needed. Many female athletes who resonate with disordered eating, mental guilt around food and body, relative energy deficiency in sport or female athlete triad, amenorrhea, repeat injuries due to negligent nutrition, or frankly, just a lack of knowledge and understanding on their fueling needs, have seen incredible success in the Fast Track. After years of working as a sports RD, I've compiled the most effective ways for female athletes to learn nutrition, be supported, be challenged, and ultimately find their success with fueling as fast as possible. So don't wait another day. Get to your goals faster by joining the Female Athlete System of Transformation. Look in the show notes or head to the website to book a free call and learn more. Okay, now let's get you back to the conversation. Enjoy.
Oh man, I just want to pause for a moment because you've kind of brought up a lot of really good things. First, being that so much of this did start for you at such a young age and you didn't have knowledge on it, nor were you expected to, right? Like at 12, 13 years old. And I think this is so important to highlight that, sure, we want to increase, you know, awareness and knowledge. And that's why I thank you so much for doing what you do now. But like, I think it's also really important for parents and coaches and caretakers and doctors to really hear this as the adults in a situation. You know, maybe at 12, 13, these little behaviors were normalized because it's structured in your high school of, you know, regimented eating times, or, you know, oh, she's just a little behind on her growth chart, give her a few more years, you know, and we can really kind of normalize and have hope. But what we could also do is change the narrative to just, you know, put up a little like caution sign, or ask the more difficult questions, or, you know, encourage the parents to, no, I don't know your parents. This is no comment on them. Actually, I have seen them on your YouTube videos. They seem wonderful.
Yeah, they also do feel a lot of guilt for like not stepping in or taking action earlier. And I think it's just hard because parents will always see the best in their kids. So they saw me and were like, well, she's getting good grades. She's running well. She does well in sports. Like, she's eating. Like, I think everything's fine. And there's just like a lot of misunderstanding around like what an eating disorder can look like. And like, I don't know, it's kind of like a high functioning alcoholic. Like they could be an alcoholic and be drunk all the time, but still functioning because like they've learned how to do that.
Oh yeah.
Kind of the same in a way. Obviously it's different, but so it's really hard for people, especially people close to you, to like accept that there could be a problem, because it's very easy to justify that there isn't, especially in cases where like there isn't like huge health consequences. Like, it's not like my heart was stopping, you know, at the time, which I, you know, that you shouldn't take that, but like, yeah.
Right. But like you said, it kind of took 8 years for certain things to develop that then did become more serious in that physical manifestation. And so I think, again, like the point of raising awareness so that adults in the situation can at least be curious, doctors can ask that one extra question, or encourage, you know, a more holistic nutrition education that really is hopefully a good nutrition education of an all foods fit, and encouraging eating lots of food. I don't even want to say enough food, like lots of food as a growing adolescent athlete. I think those are some of the, you know, things that are so important to just like stress a little bit more, because then it's like in your situation, it was like, man, it wasn't until 8 years later when, you know, we really started to learn about this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I do really, really wish that like doctors were just more trained in like seeing and understanding eating disorders, being able to intervene earlier, because it's truly so important. Like, early intervention is literally the best thing possible in order to recover from one. It just, like, it only gets harder, like, the longer it persists. So I just really, really wish that there was better training in the medical field. But I also realized, like, you know, they have to train them for all sorts of things. So
it's
not like I'm mad at anyone. It's just like, I wish that that could be more of a priority. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Right. There's no blame on any singular person at all. But again, just knowledge, learning, awareness, research, and sharing these experiences can go a really far way. And so, you know, throughout college, you kind of mentioned that throughout high school, you know, it was kind of like a lot of your behaviors were even like normalized because it almost like fit into high school routines and things like that. Did it feel the same way for you in college, or were there other struggles that you noticed in college? I think injuries started then.
Yeah, I mean, so injuries, which was a red flag, like bone injuries especially, but also in college at that point, like, I definitely realized that it was a problem, but not so much because I thought what I was doing was a problem. It was because I saw, like, teammates that were doing the same thing, and I was like, oh, that doesn't, I wouldn't tell them to do that. Like, that doesn't seem like a good thing to do. And so then I realized that, like, that also applied to myself. And so that was kind of how that process started, where I was like, oh, this isn't good. Like, if they actually wanted to be fast, that isn't what I would tell them to do, you know?
And yet you were doing it yourself.
And yet I was doing it myself. And so that was, like, one of the parts that helped me realize that. But then at the same time, like, I'm so competitive, and I think eating disorders can be really competitive too. And so when you see someone else doing something, you're like, well, I need to do this better. And when that is a maladaptive behavior, that's, like, very harmful. And so college also was, like, a big trigger for me. I was away from home. Everything changed. And I wanted that control more than ever. And so I, like, started kind of pursuing, like, participating in those behaviors, like, at a different level than I had ever before, to the point where, like, it was definitely impacting my life and, like, what I did, because I wasn't flexible with anything, because I was always on, like, this very rigid schedule, which you don't have to be in college, but, like, I put myself on that. And even though towards the end of college, I got a little bit better about, like, making time to, like, hang out with people, do things outside of just, like, school, running, that, like, I think it really, like, looking back, impacted my college experience a lot, because I just wasn't participating in, like, anything outside of my sport or school, really. Like, I was, you know, I wasn't, like, a shut-in, you know. I hung out with my teammates and stuff, but, like, not to the extent that I think I maybe could have or should have. Not that you have to be social, but, like, I am a pretty social person, like, and now I'm so much more social than I was in college, which is weird, because I think college should kind of be the most social time of your life. Like, you're constantly surrounded by people. So yeah. I think, like, looking back, I missed out on some stuff.
Yeah. And it's just, again, the control piece and also the competitive piece. And I think this is why, one of many reasons why athletes are, you know, at risk of, whether it be an eating disorder or disordered eating, is sometimes those personality traits that make you succeed in athletics are also the personality traits that can really enable an eating disorder. They overlap quite a bit.
Yeah, like perfectionism and discipline, like all of those. I mean, there's a huge crossover for sure.
And something that I really try to stress on my clients is that, you know, many of those traits can be good and are powerful and help you succeed. It's just, how are we using them in our life? Mm-hmm. You know, there's a time and a place. And, you know, something that I encourage for my clients is, even, can you, the perfectionism one, I think we got some work to do on that, because that's always an unattainable goal, but, like, determination, right? Not wanting to give up, discipline. It's like, is it possible to spin that to, you know, determination to overcome your struggles, determination to get through recovery. You know, so we all have strengths and weaknesses and different personality traits. And I think it's really like, what areas of life can I apply this to, that it actually helps me succeed, and what areas of life do I have to let it go in?
Yeah. And I think that like, that's been a huge thing for me is like, okay, well, now I need to be like determined and disciplined and like following, you know, my meal plan or whatever that next step in recovery is. I need to turn that discipline to there. And then the competitive nature for me, whenever I feel like really hopeless, because like recovery is really, really hard. And there have been multiple points where I'm like, it's not possible. Like, I can't do it. There's just no way. But whenever I start to think that, I remind myself that like people have recovered. And then the competitive in me is like, well, if they did it, then certainly I can do it too. Like, why?
There you go.
Way they could do it and I couldn't. So yeah, I'm going to be able to do this.
There you go. Exactly. Turn that competitiveness into a much more positive spin. I love that. Yeah. Like, I got super excited. I'm like smiling over here when you said that, because I'm like, duh, of course you can. If other people can do it, of course you can do it, you know? And I think that's the mindset that, you know, so many girls need to tap into, you know, if this is happening. And you said it earlier too, just, you know, how difficult recovery is. And again, so many good YouTube videos that you are willing to express that on. And you also started recovery as you were training in your final few weeks training for, and then throughout the Olympic trials, the Tokyo Olympic trials, where you were going in for steeplechase. So that was also like an incredibly hard time, but you did already mention that it was kind of chosen for you by your doctors and your team that you were running for at the time. It's still hard though, right? It's hard to make the decision on your own. And it's also incredibly hard to be, you know, somewhat forced into it. I have air quotes around it because I guess you didn't have to do it, but then there would have been other consequences of like, you know, not being on the team and things like that, or continuing the injury cycle. And, you know, gosh, what a challenging time in your life. I guess just sharing the realities of the treatment center and what that was like compared to like now, where, you know, maybe you're still in this journey, but like the importance of like taking a pause for you, if you think so, the importance of taking a pause and like actually saying, okay, I'm going into this like 6-week program. What impact do you think that had in your recovery versus trying to just do it on your own?
I think that it was hugely impactful. One of the hardest things for me in recovery is constantly having to like actively make the choice to like pursue recovery. And like you make it times every single day. And being in a treatment center, having someone preparing your meals for you, creating your schedule for you, like it really helps take some of that decision making out of your own hands. And even though that sounds like a nightmare, like it takes that control away, it's almost better in a way to not have an option for the control, because then you're like, oh, well, like I can't have it. So like I have to just let them make these decisions. And that for me was like really helpful. It provided like another layer of like assurance that I would do with those things. And also like it's like a very intensive environment, you know, like you're going to 4, sometimes more forms of therapy a day. Like, so you definitely like dig into stuff, like you're working
emotionally intensive.
It's, like, it's very difficult to like have that control taken away. But then like every time, like you have so much support around you, so you can like work through what that feels like, why it feels like that, and like just slowly like overcome basically like all of those thoughts and fears that surround, you know, food in your body and not exercising and stuff like that. So that was definitely like big for kind of jumpstarting things for me, because it provided me with like all these tools and way more knowledge around kind of like what the root of my eating disorder was, like why it was happening. And also like 6 weeks of eating like way more food than I ever had was eye-opening, just because like literally nothing bad happened. And that, like, I was shocked. You know, I was like, I'm going to be obese by the end of this. Like, it's going to be, I mean, not that that's necessarily like, you know, some people, that's it, you know, your natural body type, whatever it is, you go with it, it's fine.
But at that time it was a fear. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a huge fear. And like, it was literally just, no, my body literally needed all of this food, and it's kind of crazy, you know? And my hunger like got stronger throughout the whole thing. Like I was, there were a few times where I was like, oh, I really don't think I can eat this. Like, I'm just not hungry at all. But most of the time I was like truly very hungry for like everything I was eating, which was cool to see, because like they continually like increased my meal plan throughout it, and I kept just getting hungry for it. So It just kind of showed like how your body and your metabolism can adapt. And they kept increasing my meal plan, largely because I was also training, as you said.
Yeah.
And then that, my meals were noticeably bigger than everyone else's at the center. And then that was like another eye-opening experience, because it kind of made me realize how much of a difference like intense training makes on what you need to eat. And sometimes I was able to justify what I was eating, because I was like, well, I'm pretty short. I'm not a big person, and I just don't need that much. I'm different. But like seeing that, I was like, no, you need a lot, because you're working out, you know, 4 times more than most people would, at least. Like,
yeah.
Maybe more, sometimes more than that. Like, you know, you hit the daily physical activity, you hit the weekly physical activity suggestion in the first day of the week. Like, you're going to need a lot more food. And I think that I minimized that. And then that showed me that it was actually like, it, you know, you, not only is it okay to eat more than other people, but like you need to, like for anyone, if you're hungry, it's totally fine to eat more than your friend is. But like, if you're an athlete, you just have to accept the reality that you're probably always going to, like, that's just the way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that you just said that, because I do work with a lot of girls as they're going through their own journey to recover, restore, like heal from red S or disordered eating. And there's this big push and motivation of, okay, I need to eat more to overcome this. But it's actually, if you're an athlete, you're just going to need to eat more your whole life. Like, we just need to come to terms and accept that. You might need to eat more than your mother. You might need to eat more than your boyfriend. You might need to eat more than your peer just throughout life, you know? And then we add on top of that the individual differences, athlete or not, that some people just need more food. And there's that too.
Yeah. And like, you, like, if you're an athlete yourself and it takes you a while to realize that, you also have to know that other people might not realize that. And so like, you might get caught, You know, like my grandpa, almost every time he sees me eat, it's like, oh, wow, a lot of food. And it's like so difficult for me. I just want to like yell at him every time. But like, People just aren't aware. They're not trying to like be harmful. It's just people don't realize like how much, what you eat that day, or like how much food you need, or how hungry you are. And like, I would always recommend like, don't comment on people's food, but there are generational differences, and like, you have to kind of learn how to just like brush those off your shoulder as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's one of the hardest things, as you're learning and coming to terms with it, but then you have all these outside sources or close family members that are, whether it's still stuck in old ways or thought patterns, or just that, you know, their generational difference, like you said, like learning to let it go, learning not to believe in it, probably, you know, to say, okay, these are just words. I don't have to believe in it. I don't have to choose to act on it. I mean, that's hard, and it takes a lot of practice and patience with yourself.
Yeah,
for sure. Mm-hmm.
Fans, I hope you are enjoying the conversation. We are going to take a quick pause so I can tell you about our partners. They are so valuable in providing you with amazing products and helping keep this podcast going. First, Prevenix. Thanks to their incredible Joint Health Plus product, my aches and pains from running, and honestly, being a new mom, as crazy as that sounds, have literally disappeared. As I continue to push my body physically as an athlete, and frankly, as I continue to age, I was shocked at the aches I was beginning to feel in my knees, wrists, ankles. It seemed like omega-3s, curcumin, nothing was really working. But after just 1 month of Joint Health Plus from Prevenix, I felt a drastic improvement. Honestly, this is something I rarely experience with supplements, but Prevenix uses quality ingredients backed by sound science. Their products are pharmaceutical grade with extensive testing for safety, quality, and purity. They offer other supplements, including probiotics, omega, immune health, and a multivitamin, which I also use daily. And the science behind their multi has changed my opinion on multivitamins altogether. I used to never recommend them or take them myself, and now I recommend and take Prevnix Multivitamin Mineral and Antioxidant Plus daily. I am so impressed with Prevnix, and I can't wait for you to try. You can get 15% off your first order using the code RISEUP at checkout. The company also offers 100% money-back guarantee within 30 days because they stand by their products, and so do I. Head to Prevnix.com, P-R-E-V-I-N-E-X.com, and use the code RISEUP, one word, at checkout for 15% off. For nutritional shakes and bars to fuel your body, head to Orgain.com and use the code RISEUP30 for 30% off your first order. Orgain's ready-to-drink nutritional shakes are my go-to to throw in my bag when I'm heading to the gym or to a trail to run, so that when I'm done, I've got a recovery option to refuel and rehydrate with right away. Orgain makes nutrition and sports nutrition that works. For repeat customers, check the show notes for more. And again, first-time customers, head to Orgain.com and use the code RISEUP30, all caps. And last, ladies, moms, every mom is an athlete. That's why Jen and Carrie have designed the best nursing and pumping sports bras. I cannot rave about these enough. I hate that most maternity bras have clips and don't support being active, but Jen and Carrie get that because they're moms and athletes themselves. They want you to be a mom and an athlete. So their stylish and athletic high-impact bras allow you to crush your workout and then feed your baby with comfort and style. They have saved me during this time of my life, keeping up with sport and momming. Please go check them out at jenandcarrie.com and use the code RISEUP10 for $10 off your order. You won't regret it. Again, jenandcarrie.com, RISEUP, all caps, RISEUP10 for $10 off. Let's get back to the episode.
Finishing your formalized treatment, you were there for 6 weeks, right? And I don't know where your head was at the time, but I can imagine so many people are like, okay, I'm just going to do these 6 weeks and then everything will be better. But that's not exactly how the story goes. 6 weeks is like, hey, this is a huge, massive overhaul. This is the foundation. This is what will, you know, really help kind of kickstart your journey towards a better life, a stronger body, and so much more. So after the 6 weeks of actual treatment center, which by the way, then you ran at the Olympic trials, you did amazing, but then you were hit with another injury soon after that, right? Mm-hmm. Am I right on the timeline?
Yeah. I mean, as you said, the 6 weeks, I mean, going in was like, there's no way that I will be fine in 6 weeks. I know that that's not.
Okay, you did know that.
My parents, of course, were like, no, they've told us there have been people that come in 6 weeks. They're good. They're better. And I'm like, there's no way. I'm glad you guys still have that sort of positivity in your life, but there's no way. Yeah, I see it as like a kickstart. It provided me with tools, knowledge. It was definitely an eye-opening experience and something that I don't regret doing at all. It was good. I see positives and negatives of me continuing to train during treatment, because I think on one hand, great, because it taught me like exactly how I need to fuel for training, and it kind of showed me how much I need it, and I want to be able, like, that is very valuable knowledge to me, because obviously I want to train for like the majority of my life. But on the other hand, I didn't necessarily deal with the psychological difficulty of like not exercising and still eating mm-hmm. while I was in treatment, which I also think is like very important. So that's kind of something that when I did get injured, I had to face more, and I wasn't in treatment at the time.
So navigating that on your own more.
Yeah. Also, like that injury just was really, really tough for me to handle because I had spent like the last 2 months, like very, very aggressively, like trying so hard to overcome my eating disorder and trying so hard to like really feel myself well. And like the main motivation was like, okay, I like want to be able to train. I don't want to get injured anymore. Like, and then getting that injury, I was like, well, it was all for nothing. Like none of it worked. And I had to like, I complained about it to my therapist like weekly basically, but it's just kind of, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, well, wait, you did 12 years of damage here. You can't expect that to change in 2 months. So it's just another one of those situations where like I had to accept that like more work needed to be done before I'd necessarily see the dividends, and accept, you know, that I would need to practice delayed gratification for this whole process, which once again is one of those things where like, I'm so good at delayed gratification in running and in training. And then I have to like translate that to the other side. And it's definitely not easy, but I mean, getting that injury, I think in the long run ended up being good for me because it kind of pushed me to realize that like I needed to step back from being on a professional team and be able to deal with things on my own timeline. Have that sort of flexibility to prioritize like my health, even, and my mental health especially, which obviously the team was like super supportive of me like pursuing this, but like they also wanted me to fulfill my contract obligations, and like I just didn't see that those really being congruent at the time. And so this injury kind of pushed me to realize I needed to step away, and it also kind of forced me to start to work on dealing with eating while I wasn't exercising at the same intensity or at all. So yeah, it was just another situation where it wasn't something I wanted to do, but I think at the time, like it was good.
Yeah.
But not necessarily fun.
No, we can have a lot of different feelings as it's actively going on in your personal life versus looking at it in hindsight. Very, very different. But I agree with you because it's as important as it is to learn how to fuel to run, we also need to learn how to fuel without running or without sport. And that seems to actually be a bigger challenge for a lot of athletes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a few clients that were super excited that I was interviewing you, and they had a few questions, and some of them we've already touched on, but I think just to kind of like ask you more directly, you know, as we're talking about the difficulty of your injuries and then that decision to step away from professional running, one of the questions for my clients was just, how did you get out of the injury cycle, and mental tips to help you get through the injury cycle? And what did stepping away from professional running, you know, did that look like taking complete time off training or just relieving that pressure and being more flexible and things like that? So any tips for how you got through this cycle of injuries that you were having?
So first off, taking a step back from professional running was basically like giving myself flexibility. I never saw it as like retirement because I knew I still wanted to.
Yeah.
But I like when you're running professionally or in college, like you're competing, you know, 9 months of the year at least. And that was just, I was like, I need 9 months to like slowly build up and not get injured.
Yeah.
I can't be trying to compete after 2 months, you know, like I had been previously. But also like last summer, I kind of got to, after I had built up, I got to a point where I was like, like, I think I'm going to get injured soon if I keep going. So I just stopped. And if I were running professionally, that wouldn't have been an option at the time. Or like it would be, but like I wouldn't have done it because I would have wanted to keep competing because I did.
Right.
And then my contract said I should. But anyways.
Yeah.
So to kind of get out of the injury cycle, I did a few things. So one of them was I took probably more time off from my injury than I necessarily needed.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe I didn't. Maybe it was the amount of time I needed. But I took 4 months off of running. And then after that, I very, very slowly worked back into running. Like I did a 7-week walk jog program. And then over the next like 3 months, I slowly increased my mileage. But then the second thing I did was also like completely modify my training, where I decided my mileage just wasn't going to go higher than 40, which was a lot lower than what I had previously been training at.
Yeah.
But as I said, like I kind of came to acceptance that it was going to take a long time for my body to be like where I wanted it to be strength wise, and that I would have to modify my training for like a couple years to allow myself to like rebuild and strengthen from that damage. And so like I, since moving away from running professionally, I have not run more than 40 miles in a week. Like I've never increased my mileage past that.
Yeah.
And I've modified my training a lot. So now like I do more of my volume cross training,
mm-hmm.
and I just run less, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, now also I don't do a long run. My long run is on the bike. It's a long run. It's on the bike or the elliptical.
Yeah.
And yeah, just kind of like some of those small changes to try to keep myself out of the injury cycle. The other thing is whenever I feel something coming on, like since my training is so modified already, it just really doesn't feel like a big deal to like not run for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just like take a couple days, no running. And I think that helps. The other thing is that whenever I've been injured in the past, it's been super helpful to like really up the strength training and make sure
mm-hmm.
I'm building strength when I'm coming back from injury and once I'm back. So I do like a lot of like lower body strengthening stuff, core, also some upper body, but like it definitely is more like my injuries are more in my legs, and obviously that's more
lower body.
And so trying to make sure that I'm getting really strong and correcting any imbalances. So doing like a lot of unilateral movements and stuff like that has helped me. But the other thing that I would say is I still don't feel like I'm out of the injury cycle. Like I always feel like I'm very wary, always a little bit scared that I might get injured. And I won't really feel like I'm out of the weeds until I haven't had any sort of injuries for like 2 years.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like I said, sort of modifications. They weren't just for the comeback. Like these are things I'm going to continue to integrate until I feel very safe mm-hmm. in training and my strength and durability. So I think that's the biggest thing, is you kind of have to accept it's not just a comeback. It's a complete change.
Yeah.
The style in which you train, but also realizing that there isn't just one way to train and you can be really successful in multiple ways. So, yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I kind of, as you were talking, kind of wrote them down because I think they were just spot on tips to first maybe relieve yourself of the pressure, whether it be external things like a contract or a team, like relieving yourself of the pressure. Taking time off is important. And then when you return, it's a slow reintroduction. And it's not just going right back to your old training habits. It's a new approach. It's a change in your training methodology. And it's also being very in tune with your body, being very aware at the first signs of, I don't feel good or I'm having pain, to again, take time off or take that seriously. And then really focusing on strength training as well. Those are amazing tips.
Thank you.
Yeah, those are really great. Another question from one of my clients was, you know, if, and this is, I don't even know how to pose this exactly, but I think in a journey of recovery, there's many highs and lows, and there's moments where we feel like maybe we're going backwards. And, you know, a common saying is, well, progress isn't linear. And I think this is part of it. But one of my client's questions was like, if there was any sort of like relapse or anything like that, like, is there anything you would do differently physically or mentally, like going through this process again? Does that question make sense?
Yeah. I think that I don't think I would do anything differently other than like earlier intervention. I just feel like there have definitely been like ups and downs, highs and lows. Like you said, it's not going to be linear.
That's why I was hesitant to say the word relapse, because I don't know how I fully feel about that term, just because it's like, it's normal to have some moments of feeling like you're going backwards when you're still in the process. But
I think that like, for me, it's like everything that kind of happened, I felt like I needed to experience to be able to like move forward.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of helped me retrospectively. But I would say that you need to have like a lot of different pieces of accountability in place to kind of hold yourself from relapsing or going backwards. And like, you can't really count on yourself to always check yourself, because like, it's just really hard. And so you kind of need to have people around you that can check you as well. And like, for me, like Spencer, my boyfriend, has been like a huge part of accountability. Like, he's always ensure that I'm eating enough. And like, sometimes I will like start cutting things out without even consciously realizing it. And then he'll be like, oh, like, you're not eating as much lately. Like, what's going on? And then I'll, you know, realize I was stressed about something or whatever. And mm-hmm. I was just like trying to cope. And so like, I think it's really, really important to have people in your life that are comfortable enough to call you out and also knowledgeable enough to realize those changes.
Yeah. Yeah. So a really good support system and accountability system. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree with everything you said, and I'm glad that you have that in your life. So another question that one of my clients had is just, what are some ways you are currently challenging yourself when it comes to your recovery process? You're not necessarily in this formalized treatment program with like, you know, meal plans to follow. So what are some of the ways that you're currently challenging yourself?
Two of the biggest ways I can think of immediately are intra-workout nutrition and meal timings. Because I think that like, people always think of restriction as, you know, you're restricting food, but I think that there can also be like restriction around timings of foods and all of that. So I've been trying to be more flexible with it, you know, like eating maybe lunch a little bit earlier one day or dinner a little later or whatever it is, like being really flexible around that and just being like, you know, it's fine. It's not going to make a big difference. We're rolling with it.
Yeah.
And then intra-workout nutrition. For me, like my goals this year, some of my races are going to be a little bit longer. And so I've been doing some more sustained training sessions. And those require like taking in carbs throughout to make sure that my energy levels stay up. And that like I've never done before. I've done long training sessions before, but I have always been so averse to taking in carbs because, you know, it was just a fear of mine. And so I've been really working on that and realizing that it's very helpful. It directly improves my training session if I do it. And, you know, I want to make sure I'm getting the most out of my training and able to recover afterwards. So, yeah, I've been working on taking in carbs during my training sessions. And, like, the amount of carbs that I'm taking in was, like, it would just absolutely freak me out, like, 2 years ago. And now I'm, like, slowly, like, do that and slowly increase the amount that I'm having. And it's still really hard for me, but it's one of those things where, like, every time I do it, I realize, like, nothing bad happened. In fact, like it made me feel better. And so like if I'm doing it over and over, eventually it will just feel natural.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's so funny how that's something we're always like, wait, pause. Like the world is still spinning. I'm still here. Like nothing bad happened. And then you give yourself the moment to reflect and be like, actually, I felt really good on that workout. You know, it's like, hey, I think that actually worked and did something good for me. And that's amazing. And then, you know, on the flip side, I do always say, as you go through these challenges, like if anything bad does happen, like it's the question is, well, what can we learn from it? It doesn't mean it will always be bad. It doesn't mean like this one thing caused that. It's like, what's the insight or lesson that we can learn from this? Or talk to your accountability support team, the professionals in your life guiding you, and see what insight they have. Is it that we just need to try again? Is it that it needs a little tweak? But so often, because you've said it a couple of times already in today's conversation, so often it is like, oh, nothing bad happened. So it's, you know, it's okay. And that's such a relief to keep moving forward in this journey. So I love those ways that you're challenging yourself. And oh my gosh, I know we're running short on time, but I do want to ask you, because you mentioned you're doing some, you know, the intra-workout carbs to help with these longer training sessions as you gear back up for some races. So what's coming up for you race-wise, running-wise, if you're willing to share?
Yeah, no, I have a race in 2 weeks, a little weeks at this point. Very excited. It's a 15K on the roads at Gate River Run in Jacksonville, Florida. So
yeah,
event. And then at the beginning of April, April 2nd, I'm doing Carlsbad 5000 in California. So that's a 5K road race. So two.
Yeah.
Not in the next like little over a month.
It's so exciting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So this will be super exciting for you. And of course, we'll be following and, you know, rooting for you no matter what the outcome. Just awesome to, you know, see that you're doing better and doing well and fueled and strong to run and compete again, which you're so good at doing. So, Ali, I end every podcast with the same questions for all of my guests. Do you have a few more minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's do our fun questions. Ali, if there was one food you could eat every single day for the rest of your life and never get sick of it, what would it be?
Honestly, I feel like they're a lot. Like, I can eat foods over and over and not get tired of them.
Yeah.
But I guess I would say, like, maybe, like, candied pecans. Like, I love candied pecans. So maybe those.
Yeah, and you can add them to so many. You can eat them plain or, like, add them to so many fun dishes.
Exactly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like that one. Candied pecans. Awesome. Ali will never get sick of them. It sounds obvious, but you never know. What's your favorite sport to participate in?
Yeah, running, I would say. It wasn't always. I used to like soccer more, but I think I'm rusty enough that I wouldn't enjoy it as much anymore.
Yeah, I understand that. And how about kind of a similar, it seems obvious, but you really... I never know. What about as a spectator? Like, what's your favorite sport to watch and be a fan of?
I just sound so lame and one-dimensional, but I do love watching track.
Yeah.
But I would say other than that, probably basketball.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, awesome. It's okay if you're a runner in your heart, and that's totally okay to have that be your favorite spectator sport. And
yeah, I mean, but I will say that I don't go to the most track meets, you know, like I'll watch track meets on like TV or streaming, but I go to a lot more like baseball games and stuff, is like, that's what we have here. And I really, but I wouldn't say that I enjoy the like spectating part. It's more of like the social aspect of going to a baseball game. So I would never say that I'm like a baseball fan, but I am a fan of baseball.
I totally understand that. Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm the same, which is why, like, for me, like, I like going to baseball games, but I wouldn't watch baseball on TV.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how you know the difference.
Yeah.
Okay. And so our final question, Ali, if there's another female athlete out there that you want to give a shout out to for just being a role model or an inspiration to you, whether she's somebody well-known or just in your personal life, who would that be and why?
Yeah. I mean, I would probably say two. So first off, Kara Goucher, just because I have looked up to her ever since I was like, you know, in middle school and saw her on the cover of Runner's World. Like, and she's been such a good role model through everything. Like, she's been like a huge advocate for, you know, women's rights with pregnancy and also like their bodies and,
yeah,
you know, the negative situation she was in at Nike and like removing herself from that, even if it meant, you know, possible like negative consequences from like a huge organization like Nike coming against her. And that's like super inspirational. And just like, she's just such a stand-up human. And then secondly, I would say Tina Muir, because she was one of the first resources I saw that was talking about like the dangers of losing your period as a runner and like how to recover it, and being just like a huge advocate for overall health through performance. And both of them now, like, I actually, like, have spoken to, messaged with, I've been on Tina's podcast, and, like, they're, like, from having actual interactions with them, I can confirm that they're great people. And so, yeah, I would say those two.
Yeah, Kara Goucher, Tina Muir, amazing female athletes and role models, and you yourself as one of them, Ali, can't thank you enough for all you've been doing to advocate for other girls and women and female athletes and taking care of their bodies. And thank you so much for talking with me today and sharing this on my platform.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you also for just being a great voice of reason for so many people. And thanks for having me on.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you did, if you are a true fan of female athlete nutrition, then I would love if you could support our podcast by spreading the word. Share a review on your listening channel. Give us 5 stars. It really helps get the word out and get the show more views to positively impact others. Also, you can support the podcast by joining our Patreon. Head to patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition to consider a donation, or even better, join our membership where you get extra monthly content and perks. We don't want you to simply listen alone. We want you to be a part of a community and a movement of fierce, fit, and fueled female athletes. So patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition is where you can do exactly that, learn more, and join. A huge thanks to our affiliates and partners as well. Once again, Prevenix, Inside Tracker, Orgain, Practice Better, Jen and Carrie, please go check them out, and their links in the show notes where you can get deals and discounts. Last, be sure that you do more than just listen. If you need help with fueling, it's time to take action. Head to my website to learn more. You can either book a free call with me to learn more about our coaching programs and how we can work directly with you, whether it's the fast track or otherwise. Or you can take our online self-study course, Female Athlete Nutrition. You can literally sign up and gain access right now. You can explore our downloadable products, including the Red S Recovery Guide, High Iron Fueling Guide. Or if you are a coach of a team, check out our brand new coaches toolkit for teams. You can also just learn more. We have a blog, a Red S quiz to see if Red S is affecting you. If you need help, I want you to get help fast. Too many girls and athletes struggle with nutrition, but you don't have to any longer. You can rise up with the power of nutrition, take action today in any of these avenues, and become fierce, fit, and fueled. Links in the show notes, and we'll see you next time.